You've got thousands of pounds in the bank. And here you are, splitting hairs over a whore's rental like a limehouse profiteer. Clinch bristled. A debt. Rot, said Gascoigne. A grudge is a grudge, more like. What's that supposed to mean?
I don't yet know, said Gascoigne, but I'm beginning to think, for Anna's sake, that I ought to try and find out.
Clinch turned red again. You ought not to talk to me like that, he said. You oughtn't, in my own hotel.
You talk as if you were her keeper.
Where were you this afternoon when she was in danger? Said Gascoigne,
who was beginning to feel a little reckless.
And where were you when she turned up near dead in the middle of the Christchurch Road?
But this time Clinch did not cower beneath the accusation as he had done before. Instead, he seemed to harden. He looked back at Gascoigne with his jaw newly set.
I won't be schooled about Anna, he said. You don't know what she is to me. I won't be schooled.
The two men stared at each other, as two fighting dogs across a pit. And then each expressed his recognition of the other, and conceded tacitly that he had met his match. For Gascoigne and Clinch were not so very dissimilar in temperament, and even in their differences showed a harmony of sorts, with Gascoigne as the upper octave, the clearer, brighter sound, and Clinch as the bass note thrumming. Edgar Clinch had something of a circular nature. He was both solicitous and self-doubting, attributes that, because they opposed one another, tended to engender in him a state of constant, anxious flux. He provided for those whom he loved only to demand their fullest approbation for his care, a demand which in turn shamed him, for he was sensitive to the nuances of his own actions, and doubtful of their worth. Consequently he retracted the demand, doubled his provision, and began again, only to find that his need for approbation had doubled also. In this way he remained perpetually in motion, as a woman is perpetually in motion, harnessed to the rhythms of the moon. His relationship with Anna Wetherill had begun in just this way. When Anna had first arrived from Dunedin, Clinch had been all but overcome. She was the rarest and most troubled creature he had ever known, and he swore that he would not rest until she was beloved. He secured his best room for her, and pampered her in all the ways that he was able, but he became very hurt when she did not notice the efforts he had made, and when she did not notice his hurt, he became angry. His anger was both unsustainable and unsustaining. It did not nourish him as men are sometimes nourished by their own rage. Instead, the emotion only diminished him, leaving him all the emptier, and therefore all the more ready to love. When Anna first arrived in Hokitika, she was with child, though her belly had not yet begun to wax, and her figure did not yet betray the secret of her condition. Clinch met her upon Gibson Quay, to which place she had been conveyed by lighter, the bark Godspeed having dropped its anchor some 100 yards or so offshore. The day was clear and bright with cold. The mouth of the river shone brilliantly. There was birdsong in the air. Even now, Clinch felt that he could recollect every detail. He could see the wide halo of her bonnet, and the ends of her ribbons flapping in the wind. He could see her ankle boots, her buttoned gloves, her reticule. He could see the purple shimmer of her gown, which had been hired, as he later discovered, from the impresario Dick Mannering, to whom Anna would pay a daily rental until she could afford to make a purchase of her own. The garish colour did not suit her. It turned her complexion sallow and drained the life from her eyes. Edgar Clinch thought her radiant. Beaming, he enclosed her thin hand in both of his own and shook it vigorously. He welcomed her to Hokitika, offered her his elbow, and proposed a stroll, which she accepted. After directing the porters to have her trunk delivered to the Gridiron Hotel, Clinch threw out his chest and walked Anna Wetherill down Revel Street, like a consort escorting a queen. At that time Edgar Clinch had been in Hokitika less than a month. He did not yet know Dick Mannering, though he had heard the latter's name. He had met Anna's boat that afternoon quite without prearrangement with either the magnate or the whore. Mannering had been detained in Dunedin, and would not arrive in Hokitika until the following week, In any case, he preferred to travel by steamship than by sail. On fine days, Clinch often stood upon the spit and greeted the diggers as they disembarked onto the sand. He shook their hands, smiled, and invited each man to take his lodgings at the Gridiron Hotel, remarking casually that he could offer a handsomely discounted price, but only to those men who accepted it within the next half hour. During the short walk from Gibson Quay, Clinch became very aware of the delicate pressure of Anna's hand upon his elbow. By the time they reached the Gridiron's front door, he found that he all but depended on it. He begged to treat the young woman to luncheon in the dining room. She accepted, prompting in his breast a paroxysm of redemptive feeling, as a result of which he offered her his very best and very largest room. Anna paid for her lodging with a promissory note from Dick Mannering, which Clinch, in his sudden flood of generosity, accepted without question. By the time it dawned upon him that she must be a member of the old profession, his affections had been securely and irrevocably bestowed. When Mannering arrived in Hokitika 1 week later, he introduced himself to Clinch as Anna's employer, and thereafter negotiated an agreement under which the whore would receive, in exchange for a weekly fee, the benefits of protection, discreet surveillance, 2 meals a day, and a weekly bath. This last item was an expensive luxury, and one that would be rescinded, as Mannering confidentially explained, once the girl was well established in the town. Over the first few weeks of her employment, however, it was necessary to pander to her sense of opulence and to satisfy her tastes. Clinch was more than happy to fill the copper bathtub every Sunday, laborious though that duty was. He loved to glimpse Anna upon the landing, wet-haired and freshly clean. He loved to pass her in the dining room on Sunday evenings and catch the milky scent of soap upon her skin. He loved to pour the spent bathwater, clouded with dirt, into the gutter at the edge of the road and hope, as the white water seeped away, that Anna was looking down upon him from a window on the floor above. Clinch's efforts in love were always of a mothering sort, for it is a feature of human nature to give what we most wish to receive, and it was a mother that Edgar Clinch most craved, his own having died in his infancy, and since then been resurrected as a goddess of shining virtue in his mind, a goddess whose face was as a blurred shape seen through a window on a night of fog. There was an ill-fated aspect to all of his love's labours, however, for they required, of their object, a delicacy of intuition that he himself did not possess. Edgar Clinch was a hopeless romantic, but in all the ordinary senses he was an unsuccessful one,